And I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome everybody to today's Valentine's Day edition of All Sides Weekend Books with Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic and who is the chatelaine of the blog thelongestchapter.com. Anybody who loves books needs to go read her blog. And Kevin Griffith from Capital University, writer, poet, teacher, library devotee, and a dad. Welcome to you both. I sent you out an email and said today we were going to talk about love, and there was a resounding silence from the two of you. We're taking our chances today, but romance certainly is at the center of so many great books and certainly many of the newer ones. After we get the discussion going, I'm going to open the phones and invite folks to call in with their favorite love stories or even more interesting for radio, something you read and hated. But let's begin our Valentine's Day program with Cassie Rose. I think you have a list there of love books.
I do. I decided to sit down and think about over the years what are some of the love stories that I enjoyed reading. And there's a difference also I want to qualify between love stories and the romance genre. I am not an expert by any means in the romance genre. I'm aware of some of the books that come out. But these books that came to mind for me were more of the love stories. And before I mention some of them, I noticed a pattern that two of them had to do very much with teenage love, and the others have to do with war and love. And I thought those two environments or arenas are very, very compelling for a love story. For example, the teenage love is Alice McDermott's That Night, which came out in 1987, which is, I believe, one of her best books or her best book. It was her second one, about a young boy who, in the very first paragraph, he shows up in front of his girlfriend's house, cries out her name in a Stella-like fashion, has brought his thug friends with him. They are shocked, drop the chains they have, and the 1960s suburban neighborhood comes out of their houses, and this begins the story of that night, because Shelley, his girlfriend, is held by her mother, imprisoned in the house because she's pregnant. And in the 1960s, she's going to be sent away to a home and not allowed to ever see her boyfriend again.
She's going to go to Europe for a year. Yes. She's going away for a year is what they used to say. Don't ask me how I know that, but I was around in the 60s, so I do remember.
Very different than it is now. And so the story is told by a woman who grew up during that time and remembers the beginning of the romance, remembers that night and afterwards. It's true Alice McDermott.
Now, 1987 was a while ago. Why did you choose that first?
It was the first thing that came to mind. I remembered reading your email. I was sitting at my desk and I thought, what is the book that comes to mind? And it was that one. There was a second one then that came immediately to mind, which is a French novel. At least it was written by a French novelist. Sébastien Japresot, or Japresot, was award-winning in France. A Very Long Engagement, which became a movie here a couple years ago, which I did not see. I have a feeling it didn't do very well, and I can understand that because of the way the book is written. A Very Long Engagement takes place during World War I, and a young woman is told that her fiancé has been killed in action. Actually, not in action. He's been killed because he self-wounded himself to get out of the war, and in World War I, you were executed. And so she was told that. She didn't believe it because of other evidence, so she goes in search of him. She is in a wheelchair, very much in love with him, and comes from an upper-class family. What is intriguing about the novel that I have a feeling they weren't able to capture in the movie is that you read a little bit and you think, okay, this is it. And then you read a little bit more and it's like, okay, that wasn't it. Now it's this. And then every step of the way, you think you've got it, and then he twists it on you. So you never know what the answer is going to be.
Are there any really good books, any really books that are seminal that are happy love stories where everything is always wonderful, or you really need conflict, don't you?
You do, but I think that's the romance genre.
Right.
Because I think one of the requirements is that you have to have a happy ending or an optimistic ending, that there does need to be the drama, the angst, maybe some unrequited love, the older man, the younger woman, the difference in classes.
And she has to have her clothes ripped at one point, I think, in every romance, as I understand it. I don't know.
Well,
I
mean, especially in the, because many of them are take place in the historical romance. And but it does have to be a happy ending, I think, or positive, because that is what you read a romance novel for. It's a Valentine's Day. It's a I want to get into the honeymoon type of arena of romance before all the complications of bills and groceries and kids. And it's a wonderful genre that people can escape into.
Well, maybe we'll do a romance show sometime. Mm-hmm. Right now we're doing a love show,
yes.
and you differentiated the two genres for us. Kevin Griffith, my academic friend, you have come with a stack of love stories, which is very encouraging to me, so go to it.
Well, not necessarily love stories. Since I'm a poet, yes, I have to do it. Love poems. Ah. And disclaimer, I still don't know what love means never having to say you're sorry means.
That dates us. If you were born past 1970, you won't know what that is. But that's Eric Siegel's love story,
that's
right?
That's right. I'm still confused about that one. But I did want to bring in a very good poet. And you're thinking, oh, no, poetry. This is Wendy Cope. Though Wendy Cope is a British poet, and she's a fantastic poet, and it's kind of like the bizarro world of poetry in Great Britain, because there the poets always go to the top of the bestseller list. Every single book she writes is a bestseller, extremely popular poet. In fact, this book here, which is called Two Cures for Love, has a blurb by the Archbishop of Canterbury on it. So, wow, geez.
That's either a very good thing for sales or a very bad thing for sales. I'm not sure.
And it has one of my all-time favorite love poems in it. And what the sad thing is that Wendy Cope writes in rhyme. And unfortunately, in America, if you write with rhyme, you're immediately tagged a light verse poet. So in America, she's known as a light verse poet. But I think she's a very serious poet and a very moving poet. And I wanted to read one of my all-time favorite love poems by her. This was written, Two Cures for Love, published in 2006. This is called The Orange. At lunchtime, I bought a huge orange. The size of it made us all laugh. I peeled it and shared it with Robert and Dave. They got quarters and I had a half. And that orange, it made me so happy, as ordinary things often do just lately. The shopping, a walk in the park. This is peace and contentment. It's new. The rest of the day was quite easy. I did all the jobs on my list and enjoyed them and had some time over. I love you. I'm glad I exist.
I'm not surprised that's a bestseller. I noticed that the rhythm was just enough out of kilter to really hook you there.
That's right. She's a good, quote-unquote, light verse poet, knows how to not be sing-songy and overly rhymey, and I think that's her true talent there. If you felt, I love that, and the best poems, of course, risk sentimentality. She does that quite well. If you're in a more cynical mood for Valentine's Day, which many of us are, I'll read you the title poem from the collection called Two Cures for Love. One, don't see him, don't phone him or write a letter. Two, the easy way, get to know him better.
That's pretty good advice, I must say.
Yes, and I think it's good. None of these are sappy, and if you're looking for a little last-minute poem that you would like to read someone special in your life, look up Wendy Cope or see if you can get her book, because I think she's fantastic and I would strongly recommend her.
What's the title of the collection?
Two Cures for Love. This is her selected poems from 1979 to 2006. It's a very slim collection. The British also know not to overdo it, so they don't overproduce poetry, and what you get are literally the best of what they've written. So I would strongly recommend it.
Why do people read love stories? Do they know going in, are books blurbed or reviewed as love stories, or is that tangential to what else is going on?
I think they are blurbed and also called out because it is a huge draw. Faulkner said that all stories are either about death or love. And if you think about it, it really is true. Mm-hmm. And I think, though, the love component of it is people can hope for that kind of love. They can imagine it. I think that's where the World War I love stories come in. Birdsong by Sebastian Faulx is one of those love stories that it's you want to take to the beach and read and get lost in. I think that it's just, it takes you away from your world and allows you to think for, hope for, wish for, and a lot of the feelings that are in the love poems that we read. So it's a great escape, and I think one of the great selling aspects of many novels.
I know I find that a lot of beach, so-called beach books, big novels you get lost in, can be very sentimental, and that's part of the fun. Mm-hmm. Do you have to do one without the other?
Well, I think that's a difficult question. And of course, we don't. One of the things I try to teach in my creative writing class is, you know, to risk sentimentality, like we've talked about, without being melodramatic. Okay. And that's the problem, is that too many of the novels devolve into a melodrama. If we're thinking about love stories and maybe thinking out of the box just a little bit, and we're looking for something that's actually serious literature, but ends with a happy ending and an affirming ending. I just think back to like Jonathan Franzen's Freedom. Franzen is an excellent writer, and we tend to think, oh, those serious writers, they sort of end their novels in nihilism or cynicism, and they're trying to show us sort of the loss of values in the 20th century or some nonsense like that. But Freedom at its heart is a very simple story about a man and a wife struggling to maintain their relationship, even though they both have deep longings that were never fulfilled. And the agony they go through in their relationship and the separation is just so well detailed by Franzen. He's such an expert writer. And you just feel for them throughout the whole novel, and you're just saying to yourself, please don't make that terrible mistake. And you're just screaming at them, please don't go there. But they do go there. But to Franzen's credit, he pulls us back at the end, and at the end we see them together again, driving off into the sunset, realizing they were meant for each other. And I think that those are the kinds of novels that take the biggest risks, that you affirm love without being sentimental or melodramatic. That's good. And so if you're looking for a little bit more of a profound book, a love story, I would recommend Franzen's Freedom. That's the one that came to my mind.
That was a big hit a couple of years ago. It's a big, thick book, but it's a great, it's a very mm-hmm. absorbing read. It's a really good
yeah.
read. Yes.
And Cassie and I were talking, or we were, all three of us were talking earlier. Cassie was saying it seems to be a little dry in the literary world out there right now, and that's because I think people who take things like love stories seriously, like Franzen, take 7-8 years to come out with their next novel, and we just have to wait patiently.
We'll call him up on the phone and see what he's doing. We're going to take a break right now and come back, and we'll open the phones and ask if you want to call in and let us know what romances or love stories you're reading or you liked, or any kind of suggestions or feedback. We'd love to hear from you. The number 292-8513. We'll be right back. Thank you, Amy. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to be with you. We're talking about books today with Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. And with Kevin Griffith from Capital University, a professor, a lecturer, poet, writer, and someone who knows a great deal about the best books to read. We're delighted to have the two of them here for our book program. If you'd like to get into the discussion, 292-8513, or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. We've been talking about fit books for Valentine's Day, love stories. We don't have to be nailed to that for the rest of the show. So if you have another topic you want to talk about with what you've been reading, let us know. 292-8513. But I will ask each of you, if you were going to buy somebody a book for Valentine's Day as a gift, what would be a good choice?
Cassie and I were talking about this book earlier, and you can help me out here, Cassie, fill in the details. But I would a book, a novel, One Day by David Nichols is the author. One Day was made into a movie a couple of years ago with Anne Hathaway. But as I recall, it's a great book. It takes place all on one day, but it's a recurring one day over the years. I believe it takes place on the Feast of St. Sebastian, right? January 20th.
Shot an arrow.
Yeah, yes. That's right. And it's all the moments and the two main characters' development and as early in their romantic relationship, and then they sort of drift apart. They remain friends to a certain extent. He has a disastrous relationship with a woman he divorces. The arc of the story is such that they come together again at the end, and then I don't want to spoil things, but it has a very sad ending, yet bittersweet. It makes you smile a little bit, too, at the end. And so One Day, readable without being sort of schmaltzy, a romance novel without being a genre-like romance novel. So David Nichols' One Day would be the one I'd recommend.
How about you, Cassie?
Boy, I'm going to have to take a leap here. If it was this Valentine's Day, I think I would give a book that I haven't read yet, and it's new. And it's called I Shall Be Near to You by Erin Lindsay McCabe. It just came out about a week or two ago. It's based on a true story about a young woman who is newly married. And it's during the Civil War. And she cuts her hair and dresses like a man so she can join the regiment to be with her husband. And it's getting a lot of good reviews. So I would, for me, buying a gift for someone, I have to think about who they are, what they want to read, what would they get involved in. And I think some of the people that I know would really enjoy that book. I think also, though, I would probably go to poetry because I think at Valentine's Day there are some great poets that I would want to introduce to people. Mary Oliver is certainly a good guaranteed collection of poetry, especially if you want to introduce someone to it. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe they're not love poems, but they are love of life, love of the world, which comes with Mary Oliver.
Mm-hmm. And her latest book, Dog Songs, that's an unusual book because it's getting a lot of traction. It's staying mm-hmm. in the bestseller list for a book of poetry. That's unusual. And if you love your dog, here we go. Mm-hmm. Dog Songs.
We have just had a couple of recommendations come in from listeners. Mahmoud recommends Written on the Body by Jeanette Winterson, a book I don't know, a writer I don't know. Is there any recognition there with you, Cassie?
I know the author, but I don't know her work very well.
And this one you will know. This is from Chelsea, What We Talk About When We Talk About Love by Raymond Carver.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Although that's not a Valentine's.
But great writer, though.
If you're feeling really bitter about love and you're feeling kind of lonely and resentful that you don't have a date on Valentine's Day, I would read that one because that shows you the inevitable consequences mm-hmm. of what happens over time. In fact, the lead story, the title story of that is somewhat brutal. And the four characters sitting around a table talking about their previous relationships and the violence and abuse. So maybe we don't want to hear what we talk about when we talk about love exactly on Valentine's Day. But that's an awesome book, though.
Yeah, I do love that recommendation, right? Yeah. Raymond Carver's a writer everybody should know a little bit
definitely.
Better.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I spoke on the phone to the writer Edmund White, whose new book is called Into a Pearl, which is a memoir of his time in Paris in the 1980s when he was living there. And I asked him, what was so special about Paris? Why is Paris so romantic? What's the attraction? And what I loved was his answer got very practical. He said, well, they went there in the 20s because you could drink. There was no prohibition. And because it was, I mean, here I am thinking it's because, you know, it's the most romantic. Mm-hmm. And because it was cheap and there were a lot of gorgeous women. That's why people went mm-hmm. there in the 20s. And he said that remained true for many years. So I didn't quite get the romantic answer I was looking for, but I appreciated what he had to say anyway. 292-8513 if you want to join us to talk about your favorite books today with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith, or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. Now, we were kidding a bit ago. We were kidding about Eric Segal's love story, but that came out over 40 years ago, and I at least remember it was a little skinny book you bought in the drugstore. Do they have drugstores anymore? We call them drugstores. Mm-hmm. For 50 cents, and it was everybody was reading that
yes,
book. Marines were reading
it.
That mm-hmm. book, mm-hmm. and people were reading it. I happen to know people were reading it in school behind their books. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody wanted to read that book. as schmaltzy as it was, but there was such a market. And I wonder if that market still exists.
Well, I know I was just thinking the other thing, because we talked about love story in the 70s, but I remember very early in my career, a long time ago, in the early 90s, moving out to Iowa, in fact, near Northern Iowa University, where Robert James Waller was. Remember that? The Bridges of Madison County.
That was a big
So
hit.
I think the Bridges of Madison County proved back then that you could still have the slim love story that would really take off.
That became a movie.
And I believe it outsold like Tolstoy or something, sold like 11 million copies or something. And then he wrote a few sequels to it, but then he wisely decided to stop writing and just buy his big farm in Texas or whatever and just live there. Everybody read that too. Everybody bought that. You could find it in the grocery stores, and you could find it in hardcover. It was only released in hardcover. That was unusual. So maybe that is, but I don't know about today. Do we have any equivalent of love story or
that really grabs people's imagination? I remember the Bridges of Madison County, and the only other book of that earlier era that I can think of that had such an effect as not a love story is The Godfather, the original Godfather, which everybody was, Mario Puzo, which everybody was reading.
I guess John Green's The Fault in Our Stars would be a really great love story.
Let
Cassie talk about it.
What I would buy you for Valentine's Day. Go ahead.
That's a good one for Valentine's Day. And again, you see, they take the young love and they can write, or John Green is writing about young love, which again, you can really write about love in a way that is very pure. And I think that's what the draw there is to with that young high school love or whatever. But in this case, there are two young boy and a young girl that are fighting cancer.
Cancer, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he not only writes about that cancer situation, but also their love. He writes about it eloquently and also with humor.
Brilliant book.
It is a brilliant book.
And he brilliantly pulled it away from being melodramatic with that humor. Very witty characters.
Well, and I think that that's also why Bridges of Madison County and also Love Story, they walked the line of sentimentality, but they didn't fall over it.
Well, Eric Siegel might have
Well, if you read it
all
now,
all of a sudden,
yes.
She's dying of leukemia. I mean, it's very opera, very Puccini. Mm-hmm. Puccini would have written that opera, certainly. But no disrespect to him, because he became a billionaire from that book. Mm-hmm. It was an enormous hit. We have a caller from Hilliard with a recommendation for us. Hello, thanks for calling. Are you there?
I'm listening to you guys this whole morning. I love all the suggestions.
Oh, good.
And just the discussion. But I just wanted to add on, not only is it important not only to focus on individual level of love, but just the book that I'm currently reading is titled The Mountain Echoes by Khalid Hosseini. And he talks about like the love a person has for his country.
Ah.
So that's also something.
There are all kinds of different ways of love, aren't there? I appreciate that point. Tell me again the name of the book you're reading.
And the Mountain Echoes by Khalid Hosseini.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, that's a brand new. He wrote the Kite Flyer.
The Kite Runner. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you so much for that recommendation and your call. We appreciate it.
It's interesting to bring up that point about love being for a country. Here is a book that came out last year. It's really one of the best books that came out of last year by Elizabeth Graver, called The End of the Point. And it's about a love of place. The place is Ushant Point, and it's the coast of Massachusetts, Buzzards Bay. And it spans the 20th century, starting in 1942, towards the end of the Porter family, that has a connection to this place, their summer home, and their lives that revolve around it. It really draws you in because of that love of place. That's really what it's about. It is quietly beautiful. It is engaging. Readers who are looking for intrigue and, you know, special effects, this is not that book, because it is truly, again, about that quiet, special love, the nostalgia you have for, let's say, a childhood home. You don't want changes to be made. So down the centuries, when the cable lines are coming in, you know, one of the sons is trying to preserve their summer house and the legacy of all of the memories that happen there and your life that happens there. It's a special kind of love and an attachment and nostalgia. And she captures it in this book, The End of the Point by Elizabeth Graver, which hit many of the best of the year lists from a lot of the media. But I think a lot of people might have missed it. because it's not a, you know, flamboyant type of book with, it doesn't have mystery, it doesn't have crime, it doesn't have some wildly bizarre thing going on. There's no dystopian, you know, environment here.
It doesn't have tragedy.
Yeah. And it doesn't have tragedy. It's about an ordinary East Coast family that always gathers every summer, and through the years, what has happened to them and why they are drawn back to this point. And the one son that just fights for it very much at the end, they're attached to it with a deep sense of love and history. She pulls it off very well.
Good to know. And I want to ask Kevin for his next recommendation. But first of all, I want to again invite people, if they'd like to call 292-8513. You're welcome to do that. We're always curious to know what people are reading and how they like what they're reading or don't like what they're reading. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. I'm Christopher Purdy. You'll be talking with Kevin Griffith and Cassie Rose. And Kevin, what do you have for us?
Well, as long as we're still on somewhat on our love theme, I would thought I would talk a little bit more about poetry for Valentine's Day. And I'm bringing in some poems by Kenneth Rexroth. Kenneth Rexroth, great American poet, often known as the father of the San Francisco Renaissance. He's the one who really helped push the careers of Ginsberg and Burroughs and all the others in the Beat Generation. That's what he's known for, but he was a very prolific poet. He wrote over 50 books of poetry. You can find his, many of them are out of print, but you can find his collected poems on Copper Canyon Press, the collected poems of Kenneth Rexroth. And one of his most beautiful books is called The Morning Star, and that's included in the collected poems. And The Morning Star is a really interesting book. It's supposedly translations of a 20th century Japanese poet whose name is Marichiko. But as the story goes, after Rexroth dies, it was discovered that Marichiko was actually Rexroth himself, writing in the guise of this female Japanese poet. And these are some of the most intensely passionate little love poems I've encountered, and I just wanted to read a few of them. these are from the poems, Love Poems of Marichiko. You ask me what I thought about before we were lovers. The answer is easy. Before I met you, I didn't have anything to think about. We'll go with another one here.
Those are the kind of poems you could slip into a card.
That's right.
Sure. Yes,
you could
exactly.
just type it out and yes.
Mm-hmm. Like a Christmas stocking. Mm-hmm.
They're crystallized. They're very short. Here's another one. Beautiful. Who is there? Me. Me who? I am me. You are you. You take my pronoun and we are us. They're lovely. It's a lovely collection, Morning Star by Kenneth Rexroth. You can get it in the collected poems of Kenneth Rexroth. If you're looking for just beautiful poems, right, that you can just inscribe in a book or memorize fairly easily, that's what I'd recommend.
Or just type it out and stick it in someone's pocket so they
discover
it. That's
lovely.
Yeah, just discover it. That's very romantic, Cassie. Mm-hmm. There you are. Mm-hmm. We've had a recommendation from Jill in Westerville. Francis and Bernard by Carlene Bauer, told through letters.
I love that. Thank you for recommending that book. I loved that book. It is based on Flannery O'Connor and, who is it? Is it Robert Lowell that you
Maybe
had?
Robert Lowell, yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
And,
I think so.
I mean, in real life, they had a connection, and this fictionalizes that. And it is, they're beautiful letters going back and forth. And she takes it, though, to a different place that Flannery didn't go to with Lowell. But it's about him, you know, he had some bouts had to go into the hospital because of his depression.
Right.
And her deep faith in God and the two of them coming together and wrestling through this in these letters. It's a beautiful book, a slim book, wonderful reading.
Thank you for that, Jill. Thank you for that recommendation. Francis and Bernard by Carlene Bauer. And Melanie tells us she just finished Sue Monk Kidd's most recent work, The Invention of Wings. I've loved her writing for a long time. This is my favorite. It's told from two perspectives with the same thing, the injustice of slavery. I'm delighted also that a quilt played a central role in this book, as she too is a quilter. Sue Monk Kidd's The Invention of Wings. I don't know that writer.
Yes, she's... I am not well-versed in her books. They do tend to hit the bestseller list. They're very popular, and probably everybody who's listening has, I think, what is the one about the bees?
The bee. Yes, I know.
The phones are going to light up over this.
It was also a good movie. There you go.
This one, that is her newest book, is already on the bestseller list. And there's been a lot written
about
it.
She's doing a lot right then.
Yes.
Karen from Powell has a recommendation for us. Hi, Karen.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good, good. The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society. Very long title. It's two authors. It's Marianne Schaefer and Annie Barrow. So have any of you read that?
No,
I haven't heard of it.
Yeah,
it's a great title, though.
Yes.
Really.
I know. It's amazing. So it's about the fact that the islands in the channel were actually occupied during World War II. And the entire book is in the form of written letters. So in the first chapter, I'm thinking, this is never going to hold together. I'm not going to want to read letters for an entire book. And I couldn't put it down. I mean, I made my husband make dinner all weekend and ignored. I mean, I couldn't put it down. It's a beautiful love story, really well done and very compelling.
Tell me again the full title, because it's fun to hear, and the author.
Sure. The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, and it's by two authors, Marianne Schaefer and Annie Barrows.
Thanks so much for the recommendation, and I hope your husband was a good cook. Thank you very
much. He was adorable, yes.
Right. Thank you. Well, adorable's always good here on Valentine's Day. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. We're going to take a little break and come right back. We still want to know your recommendations. We've been getting emails. We've been getting Twitters and calls. 292-8513, allsides@wosu.org. You can dial now, because we'll be right back. Thank you, Amy Jurevich. We're back. The Secret Life of Bees is the novel by Sue Monk Kidd that we were trying to grasp at before, which certainly was a great success and also a movie. Do you think today people are writing these fiction love stories for the movies before, you know, the novel will come out, but in their heads as they're writing, they're thinking screenplay and, you know, things like that?
I think several authors do. And, you know, actually, Louis Bromfield fell into that pot. He was writing great literary novels, won the Pulitzer, and once his book started to go into movies, that's what he was criticized for, was by the critics, was that he was writing for the movies.
Bromfield, of course, lived on Malabar Farm up north of here, and I think Bogie and Bacall were married there.
Yes, they were.
He's a writer that he just fell off the face of the earth, really, in terms of his books. Is there a reason for that, or should we go out and rediscover him?
I think we need to rediscover him in his beginning years up through when he won the Pulitzer. And, I mean, I wouldn't write off his later books. What he did was he became enthralled with organic farming.
Right.
And he was living in France at the time the war was starting. He came back. He bought Malabar Farm. And he began to farm organically. And, of course, he knew all the movie stars. And so all of them were coming out to the house, and he was entertaining them, which cost him a lot of money. And through the years, he ended up losing a lot of his money and dying in penury. Which is interesting to me is that our favorite author, Dawn Powell, was writing at the same time. She could not gain his fame, and yet they both died penniless.
Dawn Powell was practically homeless when she died. Yeah, but she was brought back by Tim and Vanessa Weeks Page. So
But it's interesting to compare their trajectories. But if someone was to read Louis Bromfield, I would definitely say to go back and read his books that he wrote in the 1920s, maybe starting in the 1930s, in the beginning when The Rains came, for example. That became a phenomenal movie. But to look at the ones before that, because Hemingway and Fitzgerald loved his work.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't have the titles on the top of mind right now, but look at his early ones. And there's a series of three for which he won some awards. And those are the ones I'd look at.
Yeah, one of the interesting cases of that, people don't realize how often that happens, that people fall off the face of the earth, these authors. One of my favorite authors is Robert Coates, C-O-A-T-E-S. Robert Coates was a prolific short story writer, wrote many books in the 40s and 50s, was publishing in the New Yorker every week right alongside with John Cheever and that whole generation. Mm-hmm. And Coates was such a big figure in art criticism as well. He actually coined the term abstract expressionism. He's the one who came up with that term. And every single one of his books are out of print. He, again, died in obscurity. You can't find any of his books mm-hmm. anymore. It's interesting how that happens. People think, wouldn't that be the greatest thing if I were published in The New Yorker? And they realize fame is so fleeting.
Very much so. I mean, all you have to do is go back and look at all the Pulitzer Prize winners throughout the years. And I can guarantee about half of them you will not recognize.
They're like
them.
American Idol winners, you know, with one or two exceptions. Nobody's ever heard of them ever again. Yeah. That doesn't mean they aren't talented. You know, I was thinking of John Irving just now, and he doesn't write bona fide love stories, but there's a lot of love in his books, and there's a lot mm-hmm. of connection, sometimes between characters that you could never figure out how he set this up. What are these people doing together? But he makes it work. John Irving, to me, is a writer always worth returning to, and somebody, mm-hmm. he's had a couple of misses there, but I'm always kind of happy I'm very comforted in a way to find him again and just sort mm-hmm. of put my feet up and read a John Irving book. We have a few minutes left. If you'd like to call and let us know what you've been reading, what you've liked, 292-8513, or send an email, as many people have been doing today, to allsides@wosu.org. And if there's time, we'll talk about your book on the air and ask you why you liked it so much. That's always good to know because it feeds future program. We all go out and read your suggestions. Cassie Rose is here. I always read what Cassie recommends. I write down everything she says, as I do with Kevin Griffith, our two guests today. Again, 292-8513. Kevin, you earlier were talking about short stories.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got for some short stories? Would be a very nice kind of...
Well, I wanted to talk about short stories, but just a good book by a well-known author, Russell Banks. Russell Banks' latest book is a collection of short stories called A Permanent Member of the Family. And I was telling Cassie earlier, I'm not a really big fan of his novels. I haven't read that many, but I was pleasantly surprised dipping into this collection of short stories, read it all the way through. And if you're interested in short stories, I've read some reviews of this, and these are just straight ahead old school short stories, nothing postmodern in them, no genre bending. And what's really interesting about these short stories is I'm so used to dealing with short stories about young people's problems. And these are stories that are almost exclusively focused on issues with people who are 70 plus and dealing with the late stages of life. One fantastic story is about a man who gets a heart transplant, and then he's contacted by the 19-year-old wife of the man who died in the motorcycle crash, whose heart he has, and the whole story is him just trying to slowly climb up this hill and meet her, and then it ends very poignantly with her putting a stethoscope on his chest and just sitting there listening. Beautiful story. Another story is
that's very romantic.
Yes, are romantic in a way. And another one that's not quite romantic, it's actually kind of disturbing in some ways, but Snowbirds, which is a story about a couple who live in New York and then decide to get a winter home in Miami. As soon as they get down there, within 1 month, the husband dies of a heart attack. And Isabel, and everybody thinks Isabel, the wife, is going to be grief-stricken. So people come down to comfort her. But it turns out she's now acting like this 15-year-old girl. She once goes out and buys a convertible.
I suspect that happens quite a lot, actually.
She's doing all the things she always wanted to do, you know, and it's like this incredible newfound freedom. Mm-hmm. And everybody can't figure out how to frame this, you know, to the relatives back home, that she's actually ecstatic and happy. And at one point she gets her husband's ashes back and she realizes they aren't even her husband's ashes. There was a mistake made. And she says, well, I just don't care. You know, I'll just leave them there in the car, in the trunk. And
get
that's
the vacuum
enough.
Cleaner, yes.
So Russell Banks, A Permanent Member of the Family, a really, really funny old school collection of short stories. I'd strongly recommend it.
You know, he's coming to town.
Yes, to Bexley.
Uh-huh. To the Bexley Book Club, where the book club that reads an author's book throughout the year, and then they bring him in.
I think he'll be
the
there
date.
In April.
Is it mm-hmm. April?
I'll mention it in a later show
we'll
when
get
he's
it,
coming.
We'll get him to come in here and be with us. That'll be terrific. And you've got Sandrine's Case is a book that you've has an
it's
intriguing
a little bit
cover.
It, it, so it I'm, does yes. have an yes, intriguing cover. I mean, it's a little racy. Sandrine's Case is by Thomas Cook, and it is one of the nominees for an Edgar Award.
So who's Edgar?
Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
So I would recommend people go to theedgars.com to see all the nominees for the mystery and crime books. It's the award that is sort of the Pulitzer of the mystery and crime genre. Sandrine's Case is one of three books I decided to read before the awards, and it's... It comes with Faulkner's, you know, it's either about death or love. I think we've got both in here. It's narrated by a man who is charged with murdering his wife, only he says she committed suicide. He's one of those narrators you can't really trust, kind of like you get in Gone Girl.
It's a Law and Order kind of.
Yes.
I liked Gone Girl a lot, but let's go
ahead. And you can't trust when the man is the young man in Gone Girl is talking. You don't know which way to go with him. Well, that happens here with Sandrine's case. All of the evidence that comes in, and he's talking to you in the first person. So you're the one that has to ride with him through this story. You don't know how it turns out to the end. I'm not going to say it's the most compelling, intriguing mystery I've ever read, but it is nominated for the best novel for the Edgars. There are a couple others, too. Ordinary Grace is one of them that I want to read, which I have a feeling might be a little bit more literary than this one. So I would recommend not just Sandrine's Case by Thomas Cook, but to go to theedgars.com and take a look at their nominees, because they're well-vetted books, and you will have a great reading selection among them. And Sandrine's Case, I can recommend, but there are others there that I would recommend, too.
I told you earlier, I've been on a Pat Conroy kick. Pat Conroy wrote The Prince of Tides and The Great Santini. Mm-hmm. And speaking of love stories, the relationship Pat Conroy had with his father, who called himself the Great Santini, he was a career Marine, a very tough customer, not a huggy-kissy father, quite the opposite. He was violent and difficult and drank a lot. And everybody was in fear of this man, and they all got out of the house as soon as they could. Well, of course, this is the true story part of it, but it's also through his fiction. Eventually, the Great Santini becomes the very elderly and helpless Santini, whose wife has left him. And the son steps up and takes care of him. And it becomes a love story at that point. It becomes a reconciliation love story that pushes a lot of buttons when you read it. But it's certainly well worth reading. I recommend anything by Pat Conroy. You always get the decency of people, the decency of human beings. You got to dig for it, but it's there in all of his novels. But the centerpiece, I think, of his all of his work is this relationship with this very tough, violent Marine. And eventually, of course, as this happens, I mean, the father-son roles switch, you know, and when the father becomes very elderly. So I'll leave it there and just recommend Pat Conroy.
Is it hard to get through the tough parts to get to the reconciliation?
No, he hooks you. He's a really good writer. You know, we've talked before. I mean, I like as much as anybody the big books that you get lost in and you just keep reading them. And he's that kind of writer. Mm-hmm. I've read three of them now, and I recommend Pat Conroy's work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a good cover, too. You're really on with your covers today, Cassie
Rose.
This
book, it came out last year, and I have I can't understand why it didn't get more of a hullabaloo around it. In fact, I did write about it on The Longest Chapter in a post this week, and there was someone who commented on it, and he was saying that he didn't understand why. Also, other than maybe it came out when, you know, Donna Tartt's book was coming out, as well as The Luminaries by Eleanor Catton, and it got lost. I am in the process of reading it. It's called The People in the Trees, and it is about a Nobel Prize-winning scientist who, in the 1950s, and it is a South Pacific island, and he discovers a lost tribe and elements about this tribe and their longevity that he takes back and works into the scientific community and discovers things, and that's what he wins the Nobel for. He also brings back some people from the island into the United States, and therein some devastating things happen in his life. I have read so many wonderful things about this book, praise for it, how it's involving, how it's disturbing, how it is challenging to thinking in terms of science and also primitive ways, that I cannot understand why this book did not get further up on everybody's radar screen. It made a lot of best of 2013 books lists, but again, it just didn't hit.
Do we know the author? Has he somebody that you've known, or he or she someone you've followed?
It's her first book, and it took her 20 years to write it.
Well,
and her name is Hanya Yanagihira. And I just, as I said, I feel like it's a book that I missed. It came out in August, and I really need to get back to it. The paperback is coming out in May. And this happens to me every year. There is one book at the end of the year that I think I should have read that, I should have read it, and that haunts me, and I eventually do read it. And this is that book for 2013, The People in the Trees.
Good to know that. We have an email from Carl. This is directed to you, Kevin. To all of you. What is your opinion of The Martian? I don't know that. Do you?
I don't know.
I have that on reserve at the library. It was listed as, it was recommended by the Library Association as one of the best science fiction books of the year. It sounded intriguing to me, but I don't have an opinion of it yet because I'm waiting on it. It has a long waiting list. It must be very good.
In a few weeks, Carl, we'll be back and talk about it. And we'll have a good answer for you then.
If you go to the Columbus, this is great. If you go to the Columbus Public Library website, they have the great best monthly reads by the American Library Association. They give you the 10 best reads across genres. And The Martian was on there, and it looked intriguing to me. And I need to read some more science fiction, so I thought I'd, push myself a little bit and reserve it.
By the way, we were talking about Sue Monk Kidd earlier, and she is now number 2 on the New York Times bestseller list for The Invention of Wings. That's her latest novel, a relationship between a wealthy Charleston girl who will grow up to become an abolitionist and the slave she is given for her 11th birthday. That's intriguing, if nothing else, and she is on the New York Times bestseller list. Sarah sent us an email, an anti-love story, Gone Girl. It's being made into a movie with Ben Affleck, and I just read that Gillian Flynn rewrote the ending for the movie. We don't know how, but my goodness, I don't know if she's going to trick us again, so I'm very intrigued by that.
I am too.
She did a good job twisting that plot in the books, I thought. I mean, I was certainly, my attention was held with that. This is for you, Kevin. For poetry, I recommend 101 Famous Poems, many kinds of love poems in it. And also, Kathy from Columbus, she's recommending Agatha Christie's Mysteries and her other books. Many have love stories somewhere in the plot. My wife is a devotee of Agatha Christie, as are millions of people, certainly,
And to read Agatha Christie, do you have to start with the beginning in her early books and work toward the end, or can you just start anywhere
I bet you could just start anywhere. Mm-hmm. There's so many of them. She was very, very prolific. And yeah, I bet they're known to be, as you know, great reads and a lot of fun. But we have a few minutes left, and I've got to ask Kevin Griffith to explain thugnotes.com. You might want to write this down, thugnotes.com.
Well, we were talking about this before. It's just a very amusing site. The site is done by a comedian. He calls himself Professor Sparky Sweets. But Thug Notes, if you love interpretations of classic literature, it's a play on Spark Notes. And what he does is he takes the greatest works in the canon, in the Western canon, a lot of Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet. He takes Macbeth all the way up to Fahrenheit 451, 1984. But he does it. First of all, he summarizes the book very well, and then he offers various interpretations of the book. And these are very sharp interpretations. He often quotes Heidegger, Sartre, Nietzsche, that kind of thing. But he does it all in thug speak, and which is very amusing. So you get to hear phrases like Romeo gets all of his homeos together and they go after and Hamlet whips up a batch of Elizabethan haterade. That's very good. I'd strongly recommend. They're very smartly done. There was a big review of it in the New York Times Book Review. And I've used them a couple times in my classes because they're very an amusing aside, but they're also very well done and smart. And the one on Frankenstein is particularly nicely done, where he talks about the roots of Frankenstein and Milton's Paradise Lost. And it's just so amusing to have such serious rhetoric about literature done in gangster style. So I strongly recommend it.
Look for a map.
Thugnotes.com. Very amusing. Good thing to look at.
I'm glad to know that. We have just time to thank Cassie Rose, who is the proprietress of thelongestchapter.com, which is a great, great blog for anybody who loves books and reading. Cassie is WOSU's book critic as well. And Kevin Griffith, who is on the faculty of Capital University. He is a poet. He is a teacher of creative writing. He's a writer. And he is a go-to guy if you want to know something great to read. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend Books. I thank you all for listening. Thank you to our producer, Amy Jurevich. Good afternoon.